And my spiritual master opened my eyes to the path of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances to him. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada establish within this material world a mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya? Give me shelter under his lotus feet. Jai Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhupada ki. Sa sarva di vritti anubhuta sarva Atma yata swabna janeshitaikaha Tam satyamananda nidhim bhajeta Nanyatra sajjedyata atma pataha. So this is the concluding verse in this very wonderful chapter. This chapter is important for several reasons. But the most important reason we must keep in mind is that we should not become confused or discouraged or feel dry that this whole chapter was about the Virat Rupa, and frankly and factually speaking, we would rather hear the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan, Mathura or Dwarka as compared to hearing about what constitutes his feet, what constitutes his head, what constitutes his hands. But the concluding verse is very important, because it's one thing for us to be devotees or aspiring devotees. It's another thing to make sure that our philosophy and understanding of devotional service is correct. Otherwise, it's like starting the race in a wrong track. A 100-meter race, you go to a 200-meter track. You will miss the point if we miss this very important point, which is actually found in the last line of this purport. The whole point of making us understand that the Virat Rupa and its form and why it is being described is simply because of this last line. And in the last line, Shukadeva Goswami Prabhupada tells us that we must escape from the Lord's external potency and enter into his internal potency. This is very important for devotees. This entire Virat Rupa is actually the external potency of the Lord. It is actually his Bahiranga Shakti. It is part of him, and yet he is not affected by it. Because it is part of him, it is worshipable to the extent that we remember it is part of him. But the moment this external potency is exploited by us, then we will enter into the material miseries, which are a natural consequence of associating with the external potency of the Lord. This we must remember. If we move away from the external potency, then we are naturally moving into the internal potency of the Lord. The internal potency of the Lord is defined by just one phrase, and that is devotional service. If we sincerely take up the devotional service of the Lord, then we are moving away from the external potency into the internal potency. This we must remember. Otherwise, so many times we hear so many sannyasis and Prabhupada writing so much about the manifestation of the material world, and we wonder, what has that got to do with my devotional service? You remember in 7th chapter, 4th and 5th verses, Krishna says, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, all these are to be considered, all these eight constitute my external, separated energy. Binna. He uses the word binna. The word binna is used because if you engage in the external energy of the Lord, you will become binna, separated from the Lord. And then the Lord goes on to the next verse after that, but you must understand, Arjuna, that there is a higher energy of mind. And in that higher energy of mind, the living entities fall under that energy. But because their nature is always exploitative, they are always trying to exploit not the internal potency of the Lord, but the external potency of the Lord. This we must be very clear at the end of this chapter. If we are, then we will be able to put the entire chapter that we have read into our daily practical life. What is the point of philosophy if it cannot come down to the earth? If we cannot put what Shukadeva Goswami has given us very nicely into practice at work tomorrow, or in our daily lives, in our interactions with people, then the point of Bhagavatam is lost. So this point we must be very careful. And the process to move away from the external potency to the internal potency has been given very nicely in this verse. There are only about 5 points that we should know in this verse. The first is that Shukadeva Goswami tells us that you must concentrate your mind on Krishna only. So the emphasis really comes back to the mind. And you must concentrate it. Not dilute it, but concentrate it on Krishna. Then he goes on to say why you must concentrate on Krishna only. The reason is twofold. The first is that only Krishna has the capacity for the various expansions that you see, both in this material and the spiritual universes. Second, only Krishna is all blissful. If you want to be blissful, and that is what we are searching for the entire life, we must connect ourselves to Krishna and his devotees. Because he is all blissful and he is the supreme absolute truth. All other truths in this world are relative. That means there will always be differences in this material world. And where there are differences, there will be interactions and counteractions. And where there are interactions and counteractions, there will be dissensions. Kunti Mata has said, Bhutanam Yanmitaha Kalihi, that the dissensions between the living entities come about because of the social intercourse. Why is that relevant here? Because if we don't turn to Krishna, then we try to turn to everyone else and anything else but Krishna. That's why Prabhupada writes in the purport, there are so many branches of realization, but Krishna we must make the supreme object of realization. If not, we will again fall into the external potency of the Lord and we will be miserable. So there's the point of concentrating the mind on Krishna only for two reasons. And then the third point is that we may have many imaginary dreams. We may concoct so many things in this world, but because we get caught up in our own concoctions, we don't attain peace. Krishna is different. He has created this external world, but like a spider who creates his own cobwebs but never gets caught in it, Krishna is the same. He may spin a web which catches all the living entities, but he himself is free of it. How wonderful is the Lord. So the question is, do you want to follow the fish who is also caught with you in the same net? Or do you want to follow the fish who is outside the net and who has freed himself from the net? The natural logical conclusion for anybody who is sane is that we will follow that person who is not entangled, and that is Krishna. And the last point we must remember, if the mind does not do this, if the mind does not concentrate on Krishna, then Shukadeva Goswami says, the mind will cause our degradation. In other words, we will fall. As it is, we are here because we have fallen. If we want to do a double fall, then just don't concentrate on Krishna. And concentrate on his external potency and try and enjoy and see what happens. We will degrade further and further. In 1842 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti Mata says, Twai me ananya vishaya, matir madhu patit asakrit, rati uddavata adha, gange vauham udanvati. It's a beautiful verse. And that is the point that concentration begins from. That point is stated very nicely here because Kunti Mata is telling us that, please, O Lord, let my mind not be diverted by anything. Ananya means no diversion. Let me be very straight in just remembering you only. Let not my mind go to other activities. Instead, like all rivers deposit themselves into the sea, let all my thoughts eventually deposit itself only at your lotus feet. And how to do that? Concentration, another word for concentration is given by Kunti Mata as matihi. Matihi means to concentrate. It means to be attentive to Krishna. We must pay attention to Krishna. If we pay attention to Krishna, Krishna will reciprocate. And only with attention can come attraction. A and A. Matihi madhupati asakrit. Continuous. That is the meaning of concentration. That we continuously try as far as possible to remember Krishna. And the moment we try doing that after some time, automatically ratihi will develop. And ratihi simply means attraction. So we should not be thinking at this moment, why I don't have attraction to the holy name? Why is it that I can't sit and not think about 16 rounds? Why is it that the moment 16 rounds finishes, I'm very happy? This reason is because our matihi is not concentrated yet. And that is why our ratihi is absent. This is the reason why Prabhupada is telling us here that we must concentrate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of going everywhere else and anywhere else, we must concentrate on Krishna. Because the truth of the matter is, Prabhupada writes here, that the moment you don't concentrate on Krishna, then you will concentrate on this material world. And this material world is the Virat Roop of Krishna. It is the external potency of the Lord. And it is very alluring. Because Krishna is all attractive, even his material creation is very wonderful. Isn't it? When you see the sun, when you see the moon, when you see this wonderful, powerful creation, do you not get attracted by it? It is at the very least you will be intrigued by it. When you see the natural disasters of the world, while we may lament that so many people die, you can't help but feel this sense of awe. How powerful this disasters, how powerful is this act of creation. Look at China, sub-freezing temperature across this land. Millions of people can do nothing. They are completely stranded by the external potency of the Lord. But nobody there is remembering Krishna. Except maybe for a few devotees led by Narasingha Maharaj and all the other devotees. But apart from that, no one is remembering Krishna. And because they cannot remember Krishna, they are confused by the external potency of the Lord. And because they have been running after the external potency for enjoyment, now naturally they must consequently suffer the concomitant sufferings that come with the enjoyment. The golden rule of the external potency of the Lord, we must remember Prabhus and Masajis, is for every moment of joy that you derive from the external potency, there will be an equal moment of misery that you will get from this joy. It is the natural result of exploiting the external potency of the Lord. This we must remember. And that is why Prabhupada writes here, the alloyment is very great. He gives the example, a great yogi can become smaller than the smallest, lighter than the lightest. He can do all this. But at the end of the day, to what purpose? Does he come out of the cobweb of the external potency? No, he gets further entangled. He gets further entangled. Instead of freeing himself to remember the Lord, can he, by becoming smaller of the smallest, can you stop birth? Can you stop death? Can you stop old age and disease? No. You will maybe die a small death because you are the smallest. Huh? Maybe your sickness may look very small, but to you are suffering. So nobody can escape that. Saubari Muni was in the waters, but the external potency of the Lord in the form of two fishes was so alluring that he came out of the waters and immediately went and wanted to get married. And after marrying, he enjoyed for thousands of years. But even at the end of that, he was left spent, like a spent bullet. He had nothing to count for his enjoyment. Look at Pururavas. Pururavas ran after Urvashi so much. And he did anything and everything just to be with her. Completely humiliated himself just to be with this one person. But the material allurement didn't bring him any joy, because when Urvashi left, he was in constant state of anxiety. When Urvashi came back and Indra came, then he was also in constant state of embarrassment. So, what happened to Pururavas? He was also completely smashed by the external potency of the Lord. Vishwamitra was trying very hard to control his senses to attain this great position of Brahma Rishi and to attain his great position as a great yogi. But because he was not concentrating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was very easily distracted. And because of his distractions, again he had to degrade himself into the material world. And once again he had to forget the true purpose of what yoga is. And that is to unite in service with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyone who tries to enjoy the external potency of the Lord, and who tries to take this Virat Rupa and to exploit it, and not concentrate on the internal potency of the Lord and devotional service is bound to degrade himself. And this material world, no matter how powerful you are, Prabhus and Matajis, Maya Devi is stronger than you. She is much stronger than you. She will toss you about like little papers in the waves. And the way she does it is via only one organ of your body, and that is your mind. That is why Shukadeva Goswami says here that you must concentrate your mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We take this point for granted because we are trying to be devotees. Because we hear it so often. Whenever we are miserable, we ask ourselves why this misery has come. But the answer is here. We are not concentrating our mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we were, then we will not be affected by the miseries. I say affected. I do not say that the miseries will not come upon us. That is two different things. The miseries constantly come upon us because we are in the external potency of the Lord. We are in this huge, gigantic material manifestation. We cannot escape it. But we can endure it by the process of devotional service. My Guru Maharaj always tells me one simple way to combat the external potency of the Lord. He says, where there is a cure, it is only by devotional service. When sickness afflicts us, he says, we have to just tolerate it and it will go away. But if it doesn't go away, then that means that we have no choice but to endure it till the day we leave this body. Where there is no cure, you must endure. This is the point we must remember about the external potency of the Lord. If we don't remember this, we'll just run around after every other object of realization, trying to search for some way to come out of the material misery, but we cannot. We cannot. This time when I was with Guru Maharaj, he quoted to me this verse, 11.249 of Srimad Bhagavatam. He quoted this because it was very cold in Rajkot, and the cold was giving him too much discomfort to his joints and his body, and just getting up and sitting down and moving was really a terrible thing. He told me that just walking down three flights of steps or walking up three flights of steps is like climbing the Himalaya mountains when you are in the old age. So he then quoted to me this verse, Dehendriya prana mano diyamyo. Dehe means body, indriya means senses. Mano means mind, diyam means intelligence. Then he goes on to say, this is given by Shukadev Goswami, Janmapyaya shud bhaya tarshakrachai. Janma means people. Apya means decay. Janma also means birth. Apya means decay. Then shud means hunger. Bhaya means fear. Tarshai means thirst. And krachai means tired from material exertions. Then the answer is given, samsara dharme avimuyamanam. Samsara means this material world, and dharme means what we should do as dharma, what we should do as principle, and avimuyamane means we should just tolerate and not be bewildered. And in the last line is given nicely, smritya hare bhagavata pradhanaha. So the verse is very beautiful. It tells us exactly what the external potency of the Lord is about. It says that within this material world, and that is where we are, the material body, and that is who we are, or what we are carrying, is always subject to the following, birth and decay. You have to be born in this material world. Birth is very painful. Decay is even more painful. Why? Because you see yourself from a young man who looks very handsome, to a man who's losing hair, losing teeth. You may not lose your bodily features, but as you grow old and you see that you are decaying, you lose your self-esteem. And that happens to all of us. So decay is there. We may put so much perfume and take so much bath, but only you and I know how dirty we are in our own bodies. There is nothing worshipable about this body unless it is given to Krishna. So body, birth and decay is always afflicting us. Then Bhagavatam tells us prana, our life, is always harassed by hunger and thirst. Always we are harassed by these two. At some point we will definitely feel hungry. By 11 o'clock we will be thinking, now we must have Ekadeshi Prasadam. Why? Because we are hungry. And the moment thirst comes, we can't take it. Hunger at least we can take, but thirst is very difficult. Constant harassment is there. Then the mind is always anxious about something. No matter how peaceful a day or situation you create in your life, the mind will find a place where anxiety must reside. It will find a place. Even if there is no problem, your mind will make sure that it concocts a problem and presents it to you on the silver platter. Now, something to worry about. Even if there is nothing, you must make something out of nothing. We are experts at that. Experts at that. We do anything and everything except turn the mind to Krishna. Intelligence, if it is not used for Krishna, the verse tells us, will hanker for that which cannot be obtained. This is misuse of intelligence. We use our intelligence to tell our mind to go somewhere. But the places we go to cannot give us any happiness. So this intelligence is of no use. No use. And then finally, all senses, this is nice, all our senses ultimately become exhausted by the constant struggle against this external potency of the Lord. After a while, Prabhus and Matajis, don't you get tired of living? Not in the suicidal sense, but in the constant struggle. Every day, something is coming up and you either have to battle it to chant your 16 rounds, or you have to battle some idea or some position that you cannot read Bhagavatam. It's a constant struggle. Imagine doing this till you're 80 years old. Your material senses will say, Hari Bol, I give up. I can't take this anymore. So this is material life. So what to do then with the material alloyments and the external potency? What to do? So the verse tells us, a person who is not bewildered by such miseries. We should not be bewildered by such miseries. And the material existence. And how should we not be bewildered? By being aloof. And how do we be aloof? By simply taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. That means by entering into the internal potency of Krishna. This is the significance of the last line. This is the significance of the entire chapter. That we understand the external potency of the Lord. And if you respect the Virat Roop as something so powerful that you cannot mess around with, that you must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord by always being under His internal potency, then the external potency may touch us because we are alive, but it cannot harm us in our devotional service because we are taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. This is how we must do it. So, the way to do that, Shukadeva Goswami has given, is how? It's to control the mind. And to control the mind, very nicely, we must remember one Brahmana who came from the village of Avanti. In the 11th canto, this Avanti Brahmana was miser number one. He was cruel number one. He was always plundering and exploiting the material resources of the world. Everything that he kept it only for himself. Nothing went to Krishna, nothing went in the service of the Lord. Eventually, when he became old, he could not hold on to all his wealth. So his wife, his children, and all the people and relatives whom he had criticized and chastised and treated very badly through his life, began to do the same thing to him now. And initially, he began blaming everyone for his miserable existence in his old age except himself. Which is our condition really. Anytime something happens to our sadhana, we blame all external factors. We blame the external potency of the Lord and say, material creation is very bad. That's why I cannot concentrate on Krishna. I have to swim against the tide. How can Krishna give me such demanding schedule and expect me to concentrate on Him? He's not being fair. So like that, so many arguments we give ourselves. The Avanti Brahmana also said, maybe my time is not right, you know. Maybe the grahas are not in position. Maybe the devatas have got fed up with me and now, you know, we have read, right? All the devatas are in charge of so many areas. Now my hands are not moving because Indra Dev has forsaken me. Now maybe Brahma, you know, he is not being pleased with me because I am old and he is not taking care of my intelligence. Like that he was blaming the devas. He was blaming the grahas. He was blaming time. Time is getting there. That's why all these people are doing this to me. You know, we always say, right, it's time. What to do? It's time, you know. And then after that we go, and then he went on to blame his relatives, the people, and everybody else, except himself. But finally, he realized that he was not getting anywhere. Because despite blaming everyone, nobody was accepting blame. Nobody was accepting blame. You know, you feel good when you blame someone and he becomes guilty and says, yes, Prabhu, it's my fault, Prabhuji. We get this perverse feeling, yes, yes. Why? Because one, we feel we have been justified. Second, we've been vindicated. Third, we are above this person. This is why we ask people to say sorry to us. Not because of anything else, but because we want to feel better. You know? So in the end, he realized that nobody was going to say sorry to him. Devas were not going to come down and fall at his feet. Grahas were not going to change their positions. Nobody was going to do anything. So out of frustration, he had to renounce. He had to renounce all of this. And then he became subdued, Bhagavatam says. And once he became subdued, he realized one thing, that he could not blame anyone. And then he sang this very nice first song of the Avanti Brahmana, Dvija Uvacha. Nayam janome sukadokahetu na devatadma grahakarma kalaha. Na, no, manaparam ma, manaparam karanam avananti, samsara chakram parivartatetya. So this verse is very important for us to remember. He says, na janam. He says, it is not the people. Nayam janome. He says, it's not the people who actually have caused my miseries. Na devatatma. It is not the demigods who have caused my misery. It is not graha. Not the planets who have caused my miseries. It is not karma. It's not my past karmas that have caused my miseries. It's not kalaha. It is not time which has caused my miseries. He says, it is only manaha. Param. He says, it is this mind which is the supreme cause of my misery. Only the mind is the cause of my misery. So Bhagavatam makes it very clear to us, Prabhus and Matajis. We can blame everything until the cows come home. But it is the mind only that is the cause of our misery. And why? Is that really true? So many times we say, it's my karma, what to do? You know? So many times we say, what to do? I'm under this sunny dosha, guru is not there at the moment, you know, guru somehow has moved, you know, Rahu is there, Ketu is there, time is not good. Bhagavatam just says, it's all nonsense. No compromise. It's nonsense. And the more you put your faith on these material designations and allurements, the more you fall under the category of the external potency of the Lord. This is without doubt. And there is no compromise on this. No compromise. Bhagavatam gives us this argument. The first thing is people. So we may say people cause us misery. But Bhagavatam tells us that happiness and distress only pertain to the body. It doesn't pertain to our real identity, the soul. We're actually the soul. We may not realize it now, but actually we are the soul. So the misery that bounces off each other is actually on this body. Bhagavatam gives us the example of this. If we cannot understand, it gives us a nice example. If someone bites his tongue with his own teeth, whom to blame, Prabhus and Matajis? Hasn't this happened to you? Whenever I'm very greedy for prasadam, I start eating too fast. And the moment I eat too fast, at some point I will bite my own tongue. At that point I say, ah, what is this? Now it's very painful. It happens every time I'm greedy for prasadam. And who to blame? Can't go and shout at anyone. Can't say, Prabhu, stop talking to me. Why? Because I just bit my tongue. What has that got to do with what your own teeth has bitten? So Bhagavatam tells us that you can't pull out your teeth for that. It's counteractive, counterproductive. All living beings are part and parcel of Krishna. Whether you're the tongue or you're the teeth, you're part of the whole body. You just have to live with each other. You just have to tolerate each other. If you see each other as part and parcel of Krishna, moving towards the internal potency of the Lord, then your mind will endure the difficulties given to you, apparently, by people. So difficulties may come, Prabhus and Matajis, but it's up to the mind how it interprets these difficulties. If it wants to accept it as miserable, you will become miserable. But if it wants to accept it in the proper light of devotional service, you will not be bewildered. You will accept it as part and parcel of Krishna's mercy. The same point is given by the Devas, the example of the Devas. The Devas may inflict suffering, but again Bhagavatam tells us it doesn't actually apply to the soul. It only applies to our body. And Bhagavatam gives us this nice point, when one limb attacks the other limb, whom to blame? Again, you cannot blame anyone else. Both limbs are part of the same body. The Devas and you are part of this external potency of the Lord. You have to accept it. Then you won't be bewildered. The grahas are the same. The planets might be in this angle or that angle, but at the same time, the planets are only under the potency and superintendence of the Supreme Lord. The most we can scream and shout at is at Krishna. We can't blame anyone else. So at the end of the day, whom to turn to except Krishna? And whom to blame except our mind, which is causing us this misery? Then past karmas. Bhagavatam gives us a very nice explanation why past karmas cannot affect us. Why? Because past karmas only affect the body. They don't affect the soul. And the body is dead anyway. The past body is dead. So what karma can you carry on your soul? Very powerful statement from Bhagavatam. Because we are so attached to our work, we use all the excuses except ourselves to blame our material condition. But the pure devotee of the Lord never does that. He says it is my misdeeds that have brought me to this point. And the misdeeds start with the rascal number one, and that's your mind. Because it is not concentrating on internal potency, it must concentrate on Maya. And therefore it is miserable. Same thing for Kala. Bhagavatam tells us Kala is even nicer. Kal is none other than Krishna. So if Krishna is Kala, Bhagavatam says a fire never burns its own flames. Think about it. Fire never burns its own flames. Krishna will never burn his own children. Why should he burn his own children? We self-immolate ourselves. We become self-combustible because of the mind. It's not concentrating on Krishna. You know, we are like monkeys with, you know, you give a chimpanzee a dynamite and what happens? It must blow up. It will blow up. You trust a chimpanzee with dynamite? Not good. Same thing with the mind. Because the mind is giving us favorable arguments to enjoy further and move away from Krishna. We find so many arguments, Prabhu, I can't chant because I'm depressed. Prabhuji, I can't read because I'm very upset. Man, the reason why you're upset is because you're not reading. The reason why you're upset is because you're not chanting. But the mind is so powerful that despite being miserable, it still finds everyone and anyone else to blame. The ego of the living entity is so powerful and false that we still find a way not to concentrate on Krishna. Why? Because we still want to enjoy this external potency. Back at the back of our minds, we tell ourselves, I'll get out of this predicament. And after I get out, right, I'll go ahead and enjoy something else. Isn't that what we do? We'll suffer and suffer and suffer. At that point in time, all of us become pure devotees. The moment the suffering finishes, external potency, internal potency put aside please, external potency please come forward and we will now enjoy for a while. That is why we are miserable. So, no one to blame, Prabhus and Matajis. So how to concentrate the mind? By first knowing that the mind is the cause of your misery. Don't go and blame anyone else. Just blame your mind. Now, how to concentrate the mind on Krishna? Please remember 5th canto, 11th chapter, 17th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. That entire chapter is on the mind. It is the shortest chapter in Srimad Bhagavatam. It has only 17 verses. For Bhagavatam, that is amazing. It's even shorter than Devotional Service chapter 12. Can you imagine? But the entire 17 verses are only on the mind. The whole psychology of the mind and how it works are given in 17 verses, and the conclusion given by Jadabharat Maharaj to King Rahugana is very important for us. Whenever our mind strays, we should remember this. Bratavyamenam tadabhadraviryam upekshaya adhetya brahmatam gurohari charanatpashtanashtroh jahi vyalikam swayamatma moksham. Very important verse to remember. Bratavyamenam. This mine, Jadabharat concludes to tell the king, this mine, O king, is the most powerful enemy of you. It is so powerful that if you do not take good care of it, it will overpower you and it can control you. It will overpower you and it will control you. But the only weapon to control this mind is the weapon of devotional service to Guru Ho, to the lotus feet of the spiritual master, and to the lotus feet of Harihi, the Supreme Lord. If you take up this weapon of devotional service, and if you use it well, and do this with great care, he says, then Jahi Vyalikam Swayam Atma Moksham, then you will conquer the mind. And you will be able to conquer it in such a way that it will not afflict you. And Prabhupada writes in the first line of that purport, the best way to control the mind is to ignore it. Wonderful point. He says ignore it, but don't neglect it. There's a difference between ignoring and neglecting. Prabhupada never uses any word in a whimsical fashion. We must not neglect the mind, because if you let the mind stray, it will go to places it should not go, except Krishna. But if you ignore the demands of the mind, then you are concentrating on Krishna. If the mind tells you now, I must go and do something else besides reading Bhagavatam, ignore it. If the mind tells you, I want to go and do something else besides Bhagavatam, don't neglect it. You see the point? Very, very important for us to remember this. Neglect means we just let it run. We just let it run. But ignoring is positive. We ignore the demands that bring us to the external potency of the Lord. But if you let it go free, it will drag us to the external potency of the Lord. This point we must remember. Every time, Prabhu said, Mataji, if you find there is an excuse for you not to come to the temple for a program, there's an excuse for you not to charm your rounds, there's an excuse for you not to be able to read Bhagavatam, you are in the external potency of the Lord. It is so potent that you are just external. You cannot enter into the kingdom of the Lord. That process is only by the bridge of devotional service. The bridge is the means and the end. It is your destination and it is your way across this external virat group. This we must remember. And we can only do this by one line that Prabhupada gives in the middle of the purport. How to do this? You now know why we must control the mind, because it is the source of your miseries. You now know how you must control and concentrate the mind, by the weapon of devotional service to Guru, the spiritual master, and Harihi. He did not say just Hari, but he said through the agency of the pure devotee, then we can control the mind. That is how we must control the mind. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives nice point that Prabhupada gives in the purport. He says you just hammer the mind in the morning, knock your head few times with the broom or your slippers, and the night before you sleep you knock it again with the slipper. Don't knock it with a hammer. Because if you do it that way, then you will come down to the earth. Because for the whole day we are in the air. We are on this false ego trip, you know. I am doing this, I am doing that, I am creating, I am destroying, I am maintaining. But when you hit with slipper, then you realize I am nothing. And I cannot enjoy separately from Krishna. So the last line, the middle line, through vigilant intelligence only, Prabhupada writes, you can concentrate the mind away from the material allurements by vigilant intelligence. Misused intelligence is a dangerous weapon. Vigilant intelligence means that we use our intelligence to gather what? Intelligence is used to gather knowledge. When someone is intelligent, he's always knowledgeable, isn't it? It's automatic. When someone is intelligent, he's knowledgeable about something at least. Always. Everyone knows that. So what Prabhupada is telling us in this purport is that be vigilant. That means be sharp and alert. Don't neglect. Don't neglect. And use your intelligence wisely. To do what? To acquire transcendental knowledge. Not material knowledge. Where is your degree going to bring you? You will bury it the day you die. Where is all your money going to bring you? It will also be buried. If you are lucky, it goes with you in your coffin. If not, it goes to your wife and your sons, and if they are not there, it goes to someone who's waiting for you to die. But it doesn't go to you. So it's not, it's material knowledge. You know, all know that story of the boatman and the scholar, isn't it? The boatman was very simpleton, he knew nothing. Scholar came back from this nice trip abroad and he was expert in every material science. As they were passing in the boat, he kept asking the boatman, you know, do you see all the plants around? Do you know the science of botany? No. That means 10% of your life is wasted. Do you see the stars above and the sun? Do you know the science of astronomy and cosmology? No, I don't know. Oh, then another 20% of your life is wasted. Do you see the water? Do you know what water is made up of? You're traveling on it every day. I don't know. Ah, another 30% of your life is gone. Have I finished 100%? No, huh? Because my math is not, I'm just going on. And then at the end, right in the middle of the river as they were crossing to his village, suddenly storm clouds came and suddenly there was a storm and the waves were choppy and the boat was going to be overturned. And at that point, the boatman looked at the scholar and said, you don't look very calm and composed now. You look very frightened. Now, very importantly, sir, do you know how to swim? Scholar said, I learned everything except that. Then 100% of your life is gone. So really, it is true. Transcendental knowledge is all we need, Prabhu said, Mataji. Any other knowledge we need just to keep body and mind together. That's it. Anything more is a waste of time. It is. No compromise on that. It must be, because it is a part of the external potency of the Lord. It cannot bring you into the internal potency of the Lord. It only brings you misery. It only brings you misery. So that is why transcendental knowledge is so important, and it comes from vigilant intelligence. And do you know what happens when you have transcendental knowledge? Just in your free time, you should look at 2, 3, 12 of Srimad Bhagavatam. I forget the Sanskrit, but I remember one very important verse in 2312 we must not forget. Gunomi Chakram. Gunomi Chakram means the whirlpool and waves of the material world. This material world is described in Bhagavatam in flowery language. Gunomi Chakram. It is like Chakram. Gunomi means it's moving and whirling and whirling. It's like a whirlpool. If you get caught in a whirlpool, you can't come out of it, you know. The biggest whirlpool in the world is in Norway, off the shores of Norway. It is known as the Maelstrom. It is, at its worst, it can reach a mile wide. Imagine being caught in water swirling around you for a mile. Huge ships have gone into the whirlpool and never come out again. And imagine this whirlpool of the external potency of the Lord. You know what is the length of this material universe? It is not less than 6 billion, billion yojanas, not miles, yojanas. So this whole world, Bhagavatam describes as Gunormi Chakram. And Bhagavatam tells us, transcendental knowledge in relation to the Supreme Lord Hari is knowledge which is resulting in the complete suspension of the waves and the whirlpools of the material modes of nature. This is what is very important. The only way to suspend the external potency having effect on us is to engage in vigilant intelligence with transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is self-satisfying. Isn't this exactly what the purport is saying? The Lord is described in the translation as all blissful and self-satisfied because He is transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is self-satisfying due to being free from material attachments, external potency. And being transcendental, it is approved by all authorities, spiritual master and acharyas. And because of that, who could fail to be attracted to such transcendental knowledge? How can we not be attracted? The reason why you all are here, Prabhus and Mataji, is because you are attracted to transcendental knowledge. You don't want to be in Gunormi Chakram. You want to be in transcendental knowledge. That is why you are here. Otherwise you will be just outside there, Belilios Lane. That's where you will be. But you are in Virama Kaliman Temple because you want transcendental knowledge. Your intelligence is vigilant because you are now concentrating on the devotional service to the Lord. See the practical effect of Bhagavatam. It is so wonderful. So, we now understand how to concentrate the mind. at least theoretically. Prabhupada says, as Prabhupada rightly pointed out yesterday, that it is very important to theoretically accept, because if we don't theoretically even accept, we'll never become submissive. Imagine you want to study the car, you go and meet your driving instructor. He tells you, now get inside, you get inside. Hold the steering wheel. Okay, now, if you press this middle brake, if you press the middle pedal, you'll stop. You tell him, no, I don't want to press. He says, why? Why should I believe you? What do you do with such a person, you tell me? Impossible, isn't it? That's why we have to theoretically at least accept. By sitting there and the instructor says, press the brake, man. You theoretically accept, he's your instructor, he knows more than me, I'll press the brake. And you press the brake. Because you theoretically accepted him. And because he's qualified, he had his pass, he's coming from Kampung Ubi Driving Center, you know. So that is why you are following that person. So theoretically, at least, Prabhu and Mataji, we must accept. And we must bow our heads and shoulders a bit more than what is normal. And accept the authorities like Sukadev Goswami and Guru. And devotees. Every devotee is our Guru. If we are in trouble and we turn to a devotee and say, Prabhu, please instruct me on how to come out. And Prabhu tells you, Prabhuji, sa sarvadi vritti anubhuta sarva. We say, yeah, but you know, I have this, I have that. No, just forget it. Then you have not even theoretically accepted. You should immediately say, yes, Prabhuji, speak to me. Let me hear. The rascal mind doesn't want to hear. Let me hear. Let me become convinced. That devotee is going to make progress into the internal potency of the Lord. The devotee who rejects that will stay in the external potency of the Lord. And he will suffer because the material allurement of false ego is too strong. It's too strong for him to accept. He cannot bow before Krishna. He cannot bow before devotees. His intelligence is too much and it is misused. It is not vigilant. So this point we must remember. Which brings us now to why Krishna is the object of our surrender. Because Bhagavatam describes now in the second part of the purport that only he can expand himself as the Virat Rup. Only he can see something before we see. Only he can smell something before we smell. In other words, he is Anumantaha and Upadrishtaha. In 1323, he is the sanctioner and he is the permitter. This is the meaning of Virat Rup. This is the importance of Virat Rup to our daily lives. Every time we take a step, we must accept that it is the Lord who has taken the step first to give us sanction for us to take a step. Without Krishna's blessings, nothing can move. Without Krishna's blessings, nothing can even progress. It is only because of Krishna that everything is happening. Our miseries are due to us because we have forgotten our relationship with Krishna. And Krishna is so kind that like a father who punishes an errant son, he has put us into this material world to make us understand that point. If we cannot understand in one life, no problems. He's supreme patient. You take a million lives if you want. But I'm giving you facilities to come to Krishna. If your mind rejects it, good luck. We have to suffer until we realize, my God, too many slaps now. I have no space left on my face to accept another slap. I better turn to Krishna. Then our progress begins. So Prabhupada writes so nicely that all the expansions of the Lord are transcendental. He is Achintya Beda Beda Tadva. This external potency of the Lord is part of the Lord. But as Pasadi Prabhu pointed out one day in our discussion very nicely, and Chandrasekhar Prabhu pointed out to us also this point. One, exactly as Chandrasekhar Prabhu said, this is what is found in the purport. That you cannot see until the Lord has seen. Yet we think, I am seen. This is why we cannot bow. This is why we are miserable. Because we really think we are in charge. We have read all these points, the legs are coming from him, the hands, this, everything is part of the creation. But after that we close and say, no Krishna Leela, very dry. And then we go to work and we think that we are the doers of the work. And we completely forget Canto 2, chapter 1. We forget why in the world were we reading this also. We don't know how to apply this in our daily lives also. Because we think this is just some Virat Rup, you know, with many hands and many faces. But we don't realize that many hands and many faces are doing things before we do. So if we want to get married, we must understand that only with the sanction of the Lord we can get married. Yet we make so much elaborate plans for our marriage. If Krishna does not want, we cannot. If Krishna doesn't want us to have child, we cannot. If Krishna wants us to become blind, we cannot see. As it is, we are blind. Without light, we can't see. As it is, we are defective. As it is, we make mistakes and we cheat each other. And this is the other point we must remember also about the Virat group. Cheating. My Guru Maharaj always says this. Supposing now, Devki, I tell you, I am going to come to Rajkot from Singapore to see you. In this line, I have cheated you. I have cheated you by saying this. Why? What are the four defects we have? What are the four defects we have? We are prone to mistakes. We are prone to illusion. We have defective senses. And we are always trying to cheat each other. If I can take 1 paisa from you, I'll take it. If I can make $2 out of you, I'll do it. Doesn't matter if you're my mother and father. If I can just somehow get an upper hand from you, I will do it. That's the truth. That's who we are. So Maharaj is saying that, first, I don't know whether I will reach Rajkot. So I'm cheating you by giving you defective vision. I myself am defective, but I'm telling you I will reach there. Second, I'm mistaken because I don't even know whether I will have capacity to reach a certain place. Thirdly, I'm under illusion because I think I am going to Rajkot. And fourth, I'm cheating you because I'm thinking out of my own endeavors I can perform an action. But Maharaj then told me that if you say I am coming from Singapore to Rajkot to see you, comma, Krishna willing, full stop. Then internal potency of the Lord enters into the external potency. Then you are saying now it's up to Krishna. Krishna wants, I will be there. Krishna wants, I will see you. If Krishna wants, we will meet. This is how we move from external potency to internal potency. This is how Bhagavatam comes to the ground. This is how we use Bhagavatam in our daily life. This is not some point of philosophical discussion, external potency and internal potency. No. It is how we are going to use it here. And Krishna is so kind, Prabhu said Mataji, that he can come in any form to please his devotees. If we are struggling in a material existence, but we are very attached to some form of the Lord takes that form to appear before us. Bhishma Dev was very attracted to the Lord. And somehow or another, despite being in the opposite camp, he was given the chance to see the Lord in the way he wanted to see the Lord. In fact, he could have been on the side of the Lord. But when he was asked why he was on this side of the Lord, he said, at least from this side I take darshan of the Lord. If I'm on that side, I'm just fighting, I see the back of the Lord. But this way I take darshan of the Lord. This is how the devotee's mood is. Murari Gupta was sold out to Lord Ram. You could do anything and everything, but Lord Ram was everything for him. Mahaprabhu told him at the end of it, Mahaprabhu tried so hard to just tell him that you should worship Krishna and Krishna alone. And that night when he went to sleep, he thought, I better end my life. I can't follow Mahaprabhu's instructions. And I'm still servitor of Lord Ram. What am I to do? In the morning, Mahaprabhu embraced him very tightly and said, I'm so happy with your determination to remember the Lord in the form that you have chosen in your heart. This is an important point. Do we find this point in Bhagavatam? We do. It is in 3.9.11 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahmaji, the creator, gives us this point. Svam bhakti yoga paribhavita hritsa roja ashe sutikshita pato nanunata pumsam yadya diyata urugaya vibhavayanti tattadvapu pranayashe sat anugrahaya. Very important verse. Krishna tells, Brahmaji tells us, to those who are 100% in bhakti, devotional service to the Lord through the channel of the ears, allows the devotee to see him in his heart. Ashe sutikshita pato. Through the ears, you can see the Lord. And how do you see the Lord? Yad yad diyata urugaya vibhavayanti. Whatever form of the Lord that you love in your heart and cherish in your heart, that form, the Lord will come and descend before you and he will please you in that way. If you are really big fan of Narsingha Dev, then Narsingha Dev will always be there. If for some reason you are so very, very fixed up with Vamandev, you know, because you're short maybe. So Vamandev is there. If you like any form of the Lord, if you feel you're Kshatriya, you know, and you feel like killing some people and you're very attracted to Lord Parashuram, then Parashuram will always be there for you. So like that, you know. any form of the Lord is transcendental. And only the Lord, even if you are attracted to Virat Rupa, even then, the Lord is so merciful that He has the ability to attract you. That's how the impersonalists get attracted to Krishna. That's how the atheists get attracted to Krishna. They see, my God, this is a very powerful form, man. It is really powerful. Prabhupada writes in purport, demons like powerful things. So when they see something very powerful, they think, maybe this is nice, you know. They grudgingly admire. Some grudge is there, but they admire. And that admiration will turn to purification. And soon attention will turn to attraction. That's how we came to Krishna consciousness. Don't fool yourself thinking that the moment you were born, you looked at the two forms of Krishna and said, this is Krishna. All of us, you know, were attracted to something wonderful. Very few of us came to Krishna because we were born into Krishna conscious families. Those who are supremely lucky. Supremely lucky. But some of us were inquiring about Krishna, we came. Some of us came and we were crying and crying and crying. Why? Because maybe something didn't work out in our material life. So we came to Krishna for peace. And we are here today. Doesn't matter how you came, what road you took, nobody cares. The point is you have arrived at the destination. Now don't go back into the external potency of the Lord. Which brings us finally to our conclusion. And the conclusion of this verse is very nice. Prabhupada writes so beautifully that even though this Virat Rupa is very powerful, we must know it's so powerful that it can be materially alluring to us. As Pasari Prabhu said, we cannot associate with the Virat Rupa. To associate with it is spiritual suicide. I hope it is very clear by now, after 39 verses, that external potency of the Lord must be utilized in the Lord's service. Yukta Vairagya. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is unique. Unique in this world. We don't condemn this mic stand. We don't throw away the harmonium. But we use it in the Lord's service. We use it in the Lord's service. But we must control the mind when we use it in the Lord's service. Otherwise what will happen is, 1% we use for Krishna, 99% we use for other things. But we say, no, I'm using for Krishna. That is also external potency. And that is dangerous. That is why vigilant intelligence of transcendental knowledge is required. That is why devotional service must be there. Without the platform of devotional service, we cannot act. We will fall again and again and again into the external potency of the Lord. And we will always be in trouble. What is that verse? 3.7.14. Aseśa saṅkleśa samam vidatte guna anuvada śravanam murare kim punascha charanaravindam paraga seva ratiratma labdha. Very easy verse to remember. 3, 7, 7 times 2, 14. Just read that verse. The verse is very beautiful. It tells us, Ashesha Sanklesha. Sanklesha means miseries of this material world. Samam Vidate. They can only be removed in this material world. There's only one way to remove the miserable, the eternally miserable conditions of this material world can only be stopped. Cessation can only occur by constant chanting and remembering of the Lord. Shravanam Murare. What are we doing now, Prabhu and Mataji? We are reading Bhagavatam because we want to remember Krishna. That is why we are reading Bhagavatam. That is why we urge devotees that whenever we meet, we should speak about Krishna. Or speak about some service for Krishna. And whenever we have time, we must gather ourselves in different places and read Bhagavatam together. That's what we should do. We try and do this. Many of us are now trying to do this. And I urge devotees to form different groups everywhere in Singapore to just do it. Do it. And once you form the group, inform the congregation because congregation becomes happy. You know? Sriram Prabhu has a group going once a week or once in 2 weeks. They gather together very nicely under the blessings of Narasingha Maharaj and they chant and read Bhagavatam. Everyone is welcomed. Like that, in different groups, maybe you're living in Ishun, all of you can come together. Maybe you're living in Woodlands, once a week you can come together and just read. Just chant the translation, read the purport, read the translation and share each other's realization. I guarantee you, by the end of that period of 1 hour, just put aside 1 hour, no material misery will be afflicting you at that point. It will not be. You'll be so blissful and so happy that you'll ask yourself, why didn't I do this earlier? What was I doing all these years? Chanting and remembering the Lord is the only way to cease this miserable material conditions of the world. That's how. Gunanuvada Shravanam Murare, to remember Krishna. Then he says, Kim Punascha Tat Charanaravindam. How else can we do? Who will resist this wonderful attraction of the lotus feet of Krishna? No one. Paraga Seva Ratir, this attraction, Atma Labdha. Who will resist this? This is what we must do. So, if we want to conclude this point, then maybe the question we must ask ourselves finally is this. We know external potency, we know internal potency. Now the question is, how do we balance these two in our material lives? How do we work in our material lives? We are working daily. Even homemakers and housewives are working. They are considered working. That's their occupation. So how do you put the external potency point and the internal potency point into practical daily life? How do you put this whole chapter into practical daily life? The answer is given in the pages of Bhagavatam, as always, by Brahmaji, the creator. And we should remember what he says. He says in 3.9.22 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And please hear this, because it's a very, very wonderful way for us to put everything into practical point. Eva prapanna varadora mayatra shaktya yad yad karishyati grahita gunavatara tasmin swavikramma idam shrajyat upichitito vunjita karma samalam chayata vijayam eva prapanno Vadaro. He says very nicely that Krishna is the benefactor of all surrendered souls. In other words, Krishna never leaves a surrendered soul to suffer in this material world. Never, Prabhu said, Mataji's. You may give up Krishna, but Krishna will never give you up. He will never give you up. He is always looking out for you. Day and night he is finding ways to bring you back to him. He is your benefactor. Never forget that. This is Brahmaji's first instruction. Second instruction, all his activities are enacted through his internal potency, Rama, goddess of fortune. This is the shelter we must take, the internal potency of the Lord. Second instruction of Brahmaji. Third instruction, I pray, he's praying now. After understanding these two points, I therefore pray only to be engaged in his service, internal potency, in the creation of the material world. Remember, Brahmaji was chanting these prayers because he was about to create this material manifestation. He was bewildered for one, when he was born, he was bewildered because he didn't know where he came from. And because he saw all the waters of destruction around him, he was scared. But he started chanting, Tapa, Tapa, Tapa. And he began to realize who his supreme creator was. And now he tells us the way to engage ourselves in this material world. I pray only to engage in his service in the creation of this material world. This is what he's asking. And I pray that I will not be materially affected. See how nice his prayer is. I pray I will not be materially affected by my work. For thus, I may be able to give up the false prestige of being the creator. This we must remember. Take this, put it up where you work, and remember this verse. Because every day we think we are working. Brahmaji created so much, but look how humble he was in his prayer to Krishna. That was why even though he was working directly with the external potency of the Lord, he was never touched by it. Never degraded. The word is degradation. He never degraded. Na bharati me angamrisho upalakshate na vai kwachin me manaso mrisho gatihi na me rishikani patanti asatpate hriddao No, Kanta Hridayo Kantavyato Drito Harihi. Brahmaji was asked by Narada ji, how is it that after creating so much, you are still fixed with the Lord? How is it possible to be in between the external potency so much and still be with the Lord? And he says, because of only three things. Because I am fixed at the lotus feet of the Lord, and that means I am holding very tightly to his lotus feet and his dhoti, three things cannot touch me. One, my mind never degrades into the temporary matter. I never become senile. Have you ever seen a Vaishnava who became senile? Never. Even if he or she is unconscious in stroke, you chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and they will move their hands. Never in the history of Vaishnavism has Krishna allowed a Vaishnava to become senile. He will not. Not if you are doing devotional service nicely. He will never, never. You see any old age Vaishnava. My Guru Maharaj is 88 years old. He doesn't need glasses to read Bhagavatam. I have to wear glasses. No reading glasses, no normal glasses. Nothing is needed. And he's only reading the one volume Bhagavatam. Only one volume Bhagavatam. How is it possible? Till today he will wash his own clothes. He may not be able to stand on his feet for a while, but he still washes his clothes. I don't know what he does and how he does it. And no matter how you try to take the clothes away from him, you can't take it away from him. How is it possible? And I remember when he had the stroke in 2000, the doctors told us that the part of the stroke that hit Maharaj was actually the part where his brain memory was there. So they told me that 90% chance he will regain movement of the limbs, but he cannot regain his memory. And within 12 hours, Guru Maharaj could move his limbs. He gave me a good slap to prove it also. And when I asked him foolishly, Maharaj, they said that your memory impairment is gone. And he said, let's chant chapter 12 together. And I couldn't keep up with his pace. So, what is there to say? This is the prayer of Brahma. I pray I will not be materially affected by my work. And thus, I may be able to give up the false prestige of thinking that I am creator. This is how we put external potency and internal potency next to each other. How we move into internal potency of the Lord. It is very easy to preach, Prabhu said Matajis. It is very difficult to practice. But theoretically at least you should accept. That no one can refute. Then only your car can start moving. Otherwise you won't move. You sit there till the cows come home, you'll be the only driver driving a stationary car. You'll be the number one fool in the world. And this is all due to not concentrating on Krishna. Iti mati rupa kalpita vitrishna bhagavati upagate kvachit vihartum Swasukham upagate kvachit vihartum Prakritim upeyushi yadbhava pravaha. So this verse by Brahma, Bhishma Dev is very wonderful for us to reflect. Bhishma Dev said at the end of his life, let me now invest all my thinking, feeling and willing, which were for so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties on the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna. Why? Because he's always self-satisfied. And sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys his transcendental pastimes by descending on this material world. And when he does that, he's not affected by it. Although the material world is coming and being created from him. Abheda, Bheda Tattva. If we understand this about Krishna, we will take up his devotional service. Then we will be free from the external potency of the Lord. Prabhupada ends by saying, don't waste your human life, Prabhu said Matajis. It can come only once. If you miss it, you may have to go through the long route of the evolutionary process. Better not be human existence without Krishna is as good as animal existence. It is known, you are known as two-legged animal without being without remembering Krishna. I remember this point, that it's like a joke, but it's very nice. when God was going to create the world, He first created the cow. He gave the cow 60 years. And He told the cow, for 60 years, you have to slog hard. You have to give milk. You have to be in the fields. And you have to do everything. So cow said, please don't give me 60 years then, God. I take 20 years, 40 years you keep. So God, being compassionate, said, alright, I'll keep it. Then on the next day, God created the dog. No, the monkey. So He said, monkey, I give you 20 years. Very simple. You just have to jump up and down like a monkey. And keep everyone entertained, because that's what monkeys do. Monkey said, 20 years is too long, Lord. I can't be jumping up and down all this time. You know, it's quite tiring to be a joker. So 10 years, you keep 10 years. Okay. Then He created the dog. He said, dog, very simple. You just keep barking at everyone, growl at everyone, and just be a servant to everyone. I give you 20 years. He said, okay, 20 years is too long. 10 years is all I can take. Okay, 10 years, you take it then. Then last, He created man. He said, I only give you 20 years. It's enough. You know, don't have to suffer. But that 20 years, you eat, drink and be merry if you want, but you remember me and dedicate your life to me. And man said, no, 20 years is too short if I'm going to eat, drink and be merry. He forgot the part about dedicating to Krishna. So he said, I tell you what, I heard from your previous creations, you've got 40 loaned out from the cow, you've got 10 from the dog and 10 from the monkey, right? So you give me all of that and I'll have about 80 years, you know. And he thought 80 years means eat, drink and be merry. But God said, fine, you take it then. So that is why for the first 20 years of our lives, we are eating, drinking and being merry. While our parents slog very hard, we go to NS, we study, and we think life is carefree. We don't have to worry. Who worries about work, you know? You just go make friends, buy a mobile phone, go play soccer, come back, get scolding, go out again. 20 years, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, you watch Tamil movies, Hindi movies, you enact them in your daily lives. Everything is there. So that's your first 20 years. But after that, the cow comes in. 40 years, you get married, and after marriage comes, everything goes downhill. Maybe for first year, honeymoon is there. After that, no honeymoon already. Honeymoon is over. And then what happens to you? Then for 40 years, you have to slog. Child comes, you have to slog. You have to slog and slog. You know, we are 90% of us are householders in Singapore. We know what a cow's life or a donkey's life we lead. Never stops. Then after everything, we think everything has ended. Ah, but then who comes in? Monkey comes in, isn't it? Then to make sure that we have a purpose of staying on, because by 40 years we are retired, we think that we have finished all that we have done, but now children have grown up. They have their grandchildren. We are not earning anymore. We may be burdened to them now. We may be taking one extra room in their house. We may be sick. They have to spend on us. They don't like it. So what to do? So make ourselves useful at least, man. Become the monkey. Do monkey tricks for your grandchildren. Play with them. Make sure they're happy and all right. Then the parents will think, you know, at least, you know, if we have our parents around, the grandchildren are happy. And then in the last 10 years of our lives, when even grandchildren have tired out of us and we are just sitting down, we have nothing, no teeth, no eyes, we can't see, like Dhritarashtra. You know, we have nothing left with us. But still, we are just staying and hanging on to this body. Then for the last 10 years, we become like the dog. We just become very grumpy, very grouchy. We sit in one corner of the house and bark at everyone. Then we become the grouchy grandfather or the grouchy grandmother. Or worse still, we become senile. Everyone is just looking at their watch and time and thinking, when is this man going to go? So is that the purpose of human existence? No, it should not be. It can become, but the choice is in our head, it is in our mind. Who to concentrate on? Maya or Krishna? Internal potency or external? Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki? Jai. Jai Shla Prabhupada ki? Jai Shla Gurudev ki? Itai Gaura Premanand. Are there any questions, comments, Prabhu Smatiji? We can take one and then we should end. Yes.
Very basic question. Krishna is full of bliss. And Rama avatar, why is suffering? No, the whole life is suffering.
Krishna is full of bliss. So why when he came as Lord Ram, was he suffering? Acharyas tell us, Prabhuji, that actually the Lord was not suffering. Because his nature is transcendently blissful. He comes in any form, and whatever form he takes, he's always eternally blissful. He may appear to be going through so much trials and tribulations, as he did in Ram Avatar, as he did when he was decimating 21 generations of Kshatriyas as Parashuram. But when he does that, the Lord is teaching by example. The Lord taught us by his supreme personality as Lord Ram how to tolerate the difficulties of this material world. It taught us how to be righteous and how to stand up for dharma, which is the eternal principle of religion. So when the Lord assumes such a form, we should not mistakenly think that he is undergoing difficulties. He may appear to be undergoing difficulties. For example, in the dealings between Krishna and the gopis and Krishna and devotees, we see sometimes Krishna laughing, sometimes Krishna is anxious. With Yashoda Mata, for example, we see Krishna is fearful. So why would the Supreme Lord want to be fearful? He is doing that for many reasons. The primary reason is that there is his transcendental pastime with his devotees. The secondary reason is also because he is teaching us many lessons in devotional service, because he is also Adi Guru and he is our Supreme Father, and by being Supreme Father, he is our Supreme Spiritual Master. In the same way, the great devotees of the Lord also suffer, and when they suffer, they don't actually suffer because they are not bewildered by the external potency as stated in this verse. They can tolerate the difficulties and be transcendental in their consciousness. If they can do that, what more Krishna, who is the seat of transcendence himself? He can never be bewildered. If he was bewildered, he will be bewildered by his own external potency. That's why your question is relevant. Because here, the distinction between Krishna and his creation and not being affected is nicely put by Prabhupada. And this forms the basis of our Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. That Krishna alone has the sole sovereign right to say that he is not affected by his creation. And he comes in his sweet will and he performs his pastimes apparently up or down according to his sweet will. As devotees, our duty is to accept what the Lord has done and relish it and learn from it how to put it into our practical life. Thank you for the nice question. Ah, Vanda Sakha Prabhu. Jai.
One question is that how can you become devotees without suffering, without this external potency giving us this trouble? So it's not possible. If a person is materially very happy, satisfied, can he chant Govindas with feeling? Can he chant Krishna's name with feeling? So how is it possible that we come to devotional service? We are being hit more by the external energy. That's why we have come here to this place and listening to your class. But then if there is if this external potency, if it can be used for Krishna, so then how can it affect us? How can it disturb us?
If this external potency can be used for Krishna, then how does it affect us? The truth is, we're not using it enough for Krishna. That's the only reason. We're using it part Krishna, part ourselves. We still want to derive some enjoyment from the material world. Sastras say until that point comes when we realize that we cannot actually derive material enjoyment from this world, we are bound to suffer. And even if we are in this material world and if we are chanting and doing devotional service, the sufferings will continue to come. It is the nature of the material world. Fire must burn. Wherever you put fire, it will burn. At the same time, it gives you heat. Wherever you have fire, its nature is it must make you warm. If you get too close to it, you get burnt. But if you maintain respectable distance, you will derive best heat from it. The same way the external potency of the Lord must be treated with great respect. Our false prestige stops us from treating the external potency of the Lord with respect. When we misuse the external potency of the Lord, we are not respecting it. We are exploiting it for ourselves. That means, translated, when we want to enjoy separately from Krishna, we are abusing what Krishna has given us, which should be used for ourselves. So your question is very relevant, Prabhuji. The sufferings will never stop. Frankly speaking, they may increase. But for devotees, we are not concerned. Because whether they increase or decrease, we are fixed with Krishna. The more they increase, as Prabhuji rightly pointed out nicely in his Grantharaj posting, which I read, the more they increase, the more we have to turn to Krishna. We are so spoiled that if anything good happens, we forget Krishna. So, Krishna is very kind, let me slap you a bit, then you'll remember me. Because whenever you give someone something good, we are so ungrateful, we just put it aside. But when difficulties come, Krishna, 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 then we remember Krishna. So whatever that happens to us in this material world is all good. It's always good. Nothing bad comes out from being in devotional service. The only question is how much you want to serve Krishna. To the extent that you want, to that extent you will be not bewildered. But that doesn't mean you won't have suffering. Please remember there's a difference between the two. Is that okay, Prabhuji?
Yes. One more thing.
Please.
Prabhupada says that Krishna becomes dangerous to the devotees. Dangerous Krishna. Because he's hurry, he takes away everything.
Yes. Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam 10.88.8 of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very nicely stated by Krishna that when I am very merciful, I take away everything that belongs to you and that you like. You know? And you become abandoned by your friends, your relatives and those who were clinging on to you before that. So how are we to understand that? The key is this verse actually very much applies to the great devotees of the Lord. When the great devotees of the Lord like Prabhupada were fixed with Krishna, the last vestiges of holding were released by Krishna himself. And the devotee like Prabhupada was not bewildered. He took it as Krishna's blessing. When the aspiring devotees find that everything is taken away from us, we should not think we are pure devotees. We should think that it is our misdeeds that has put us in this position. Satyenu kampam, sushamicha mano should be the verse at that point to apply to us. If we think, oh, I'm Prabhupada, that is why my wife has left me, my children are slapping me, and I've left my job. You know, wife could be slapping you because you're not waking up in the morning and going to work. So what is to say that you are a great devotee then? So when devotees who are aspiring like Brahmaji, our prayer is somehow or another you engage me in Krishna consciousness so that I will not fall prey to other items of the illusory energy. That should be the humble mood of the devotee. Is that okay, Prabhuji?
And also he says that actually Krishna becomes dangerous, but then he becomes too merciful to the person.
Yes.
So how?
Naturally, Krishna becomes very merciful when he takes away things that are not going to help you. In that other verse, in 5th canto, 19th chapter, Satyam Disati Artitom Artito Ninam. In that verse, we don't have much time, but I'll very quickly tell you, Krishna says very nicely that I may give benediction to my devotees, but when the benedictions that I give them are demanded over and over and make him stray from my devotional service, then I stop giving him that benediction. And instead, I give him something which he's not even asking for, but which is better. And what is that? The taste of his lotus feet. Darshan of his lotus feet. I.e. devotional service. So, no matter where we are, the ending point is the same. Krishna's mercy manifests itself in devotional service. If we don't take up the devotional service seriously, we are not taking Krishna's mercy. And mercy must be taken, isn't it? Mercy is flowing. We need a receptacle for the mercy. If the receptacle is not there, mercy flows downwards to the next person who is ready with his pot. So if you are not ready for mercy, don't think that mercy will stop with you. It will flow down to the person who is ready for mercy. Is that okay, Prabhuji? Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai Shri Gurudev ki. It's like Gaura Prema. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki. So let's just chant for 5 minutes and remember Krishna. Today is Ekadeshi. Very wonderful to have you.